listening to Sheep Might Fly, the weekly podcast of serialized fiction written and read by Tansy Rand Roberts. This is part 4 of The Patrician, which was originally published in Love and Roman Punk. Clea grew up and built a life. Archaeology remained her passion for 15 years, and after that she wrote books, because there was less mud and fewer long-haul flights involved, and you had to think about that carbon footprint these days. She mostly lived in Europe. When she returned to Australia to visit her family, it was not to Nova Ostia, which had closed to the public sometime around her 30th birthday, but to Sydney, which had rather fewer incursions of mythical creatures who wanted to kill people, and hardly any visits by the man whose job it was to destroy those creatures on behalf of a host of dead Julias. She saw Julius in Venice, though, and Rome, and London more than once. Sometimes they talked. Sometimes they killed things. At least once there was nothing to talk about and nothing to kill. So they had a nice dinner in an Indian restaurant because they were both hungry, and it was there. Clea had children and got married, in that order. When she was 53, she went to the opera, not because she wanted to, but because her husband had hated it with a vengeance, and she was angry at him for dying so suddenly, with no warning of a heart attack. Opera seemed the best revenge. She wore a vintage gown of purple silk that hugged the curves which had spread somewhat over the years. She wore diamonds that had belonged to her grandmother and usually lived in a safe. Halfway through the second act, a dragon marched across the stage, which had not been mentioned at all in the programme book. Clea did not realise she had been holding her breath until a man in an ill-fitting costume strode across the stage after the dragon and leapt onto its back. There was fire and screaming and the horrible ripping sound as velvet curtains were destroyed and very little singing. But when it was over, the audience had mostly fled and there was a dead dragon on the stage. Clea walked on unsteady feet up the aisle and gazed at the man who was half-draped over the dead dragon in exhaustion. "I like the beard," she said finally. "It's false," said Julius, removing it. "I know. I like the fact that you went to so much trouble to assemble a Don Claudio costume, despite the fact that the dragon was sure to send the audience packing anyway." "It's all about style," he said, and let out a heavy sigh. "You're wounded," she said. "I'm never wounded. Didn't you hear? I'm quite good at this." She leaned over and poked at the bloody hole in his chest. "You're wounded." "Ouch." He looked down in alarm. "Damn spurs. I didn't see that coming. What do I do about it?" "Antiseptic, one of the great modern inventions, and some gauze, I expect. Don't look so worried. You won't die of it." "Oh, good," he said, poking experimentally at the wound himself. "It would be embarrassing to die at this point. That wasn't even the last dragon." "This is what comes of leaving the big ones till last," she chided him. He came back to her hotel room and she patched him up, because obviously a 2,000-year-old man couldn't be trusted with gauze and antiseptic, let alone with the task of going to a doctor. He had many scars across his torso, though they seemed far older than his skin. Julius looked longingly at her bed, and Clea rolled her eyes at him. "Fine, you can stay. When did you last sleep?" "January," he said, and was practically snoring before he hit the pillow. He slept for 3 days. Clea was afraid he was dying or hibernating, and she had to change her travel plans to stay in Paris a little longer. Somehow, just leaving him here seemed wrong, especially when there might be vengeful griffins or sphinxes flying in through the window at any moment. "Thank you," Julius said on the morning of the third day, and was startled when she leapt up from her armchair, letting books spill all across the floor as she came over to kiss him. "What was that for?" I thought you'd left me here alone with dragons still on the loose, she told him. Oh, he said, I wouldn't do that. I've been looking forward to crossing off dragons. And then he kissed her back. Apparently, she was no longer too young for him, or familiarity had pushed his resistance aside, or something like that. He removed her clothes with a careful precision that made her shiver, and made love to her with an intensity that had her closing her eyes so she did not burst into flame. If I had known you could do that, she said some time later, I would have jumped you when I was 25. I like you now, he said, hands exploring the creases and puckered parts of her stomach, like she was a map he was trying to understand. Far more interesting. Children don't appeal to me. I was hardly a child when I was 25, she said, but of course she had been. She was a child to him now, this tight-bodied, young-looking man who had just brought her to orgasm more times than she could count. 53, she was just starting out, had only now seen her first dragon. How long do you have, she asked, before you have to go kill things again? Nothing but time, said Julius, nibbling experimentally on her hip bone. That translated, as it turned out, to 3 weeks in the hotel before he disappeared again. On his quest to cross more creatures off that bloody list of his. Life continued. Thanks for listening. You can find me on Twitter and Tumblr at Sheep Might Fly and Tansy RR, on Facebook as Tansy RR Books, and at patreon.com/musketeerspace. Come back next week for part 5 of The Patrician.